My name is Katie Sellers. I am the Senior Director for Research and Evaluation at the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, also known as ASTO. And a lot of what I do in this position is gather data from state and territorial health agencies. We do that for several reasons. I guess our number one purpose is to help our members, particularly when new members come into a position of state health officer. What we do is kind of show them how other states are doing things and give them some context for their new positions so that they can make informed decisions about how to do things in their own state. We also gather this data to inform policymakers, particularly at the federal level. A lot of times, you know, they may want to make some sort of policy, and if they don't really understand how state health agencies are organized or what resources they have or what services they're providing, then that will not be a very well-informed policy. So we do a lot of that. And then we also consider our data sets to be important contributions to the field of public health services and systems research. We make our data available for free. Users really only need to sign a data use agreement, just kind of describe what they want to do with it, and sign a data use agreement, and then we provide the data. So we're always encouraging students and other researchers to request our data and go ahead and use it, because there's really a wealth of information here. I'm going to be talking to you today about a couple of different data sets. One of them is what we call the Profile Survey, and that was conducted in 2007 and 2010. And then I'm also going to be talking to you about our Budget Cut Survey, which we do every 6 months. We've been doing this every 6 months since the economic recession hit, so about 3 years now. I have nothing to disclose. So just as an overview of my presentation, I'm really going to just do a little bit of background on the surveys, and then I'm going to talk about some key findings comparing the year 2001 to 2007 in terms of state health agency services. And then I'm going to go in a lot more detail over what we found in 2010. And then I'm just going to briefly go over some of the trends that we found in the budget cut surveys, and then I'll conclude. So really, we have tons of data, and I can't show it all to you. So I would encourage you, especially because I have to scoot out right after this presentation, if you're interested, I would encourage you to come to the ASTO booth. You can certainly leave a note for me, leave a card for me there, and I can really walk you through all of the different information that we have, or provide you with a report. We have a report about this thick on the just on the 2010 profile survey alone. We also have that on our website, and we have the budget cut series on our website as well. So if you are interested, please feel free to stop by the booth and let us know. So this just shows you the publications that I'm going to be talking about, where the data has been reported so far. We wrote an article for the American Journal of Public Health. It was called Structure and Functions of State Public Health Agencies in 2007. And that one really compared a 2001 survey to a 2007 survey and looked at changes over that period of time. It was particularly interesting because, of course, the first survey was done right during the time that 9/11 happened. And so the increase in preparedness and sort of bioterrorism type of activities after that was pretty dramatic. The picture, the cover there, that's the report I was just talking about. It's called the ASTO Profile of State Public Health. This is the second volume, and it reports the 2010 findings. And then just on the bottom left there, I'm just showing you the header for our budget cuts research brief. This is something that we update every 6 months when we run the survey again, and you can find it on our website. We are actually in the process of updating it right now. I think I saw Rivka Liss-Levinson walk in. There she is in the front row. She is the one who will be updating that budget cuts brief over mostly this week, I think. So. Okay, first I'm going to show you a couple of slides from the AJPH article. And really, the take-home point of these, I'm not going to read all these tiny little numbers to you, and I'm pretty sure that you can't read them. But the take-home point here is that when we looked at the responsibilities of state health agencies between 2001 and 2007, across a whole lot of different things that they do, what we found is they all increased. So services that state health agencies were doing in 2001, more state health agencies were doing them in 2007. There were a couple of exceptions to this. One of them had to do with health insurance regulation. That was a small change that just went from 7 states doing it to 6 states doing it. The other one was rural health. In 2001, 37 state health agencies responded that this was in their area of responsibility. And in 2007, that number went down to 31. But for the most part, what happened between 2001 and 2007 was really an expansion of responsibilities that the population depends on state health agencies to carry out. In this article, we also looked at some emerging areas of state public health agency practice. These were identified as emerging in 2001 because they were sort of new areas for state public health, including something like bioterrorism preparedness. For every single one of these areas that were identified as emerging in 2001, the number of states that were dealing with these responsibilities went up in 2007. So a really vast increase in scope of responsibility without any kind of accompanying increase in funding for state health agencies over that period of time. So now I'm going to really launch into the 2010 data. That was just giving you a little bit of background from 2001 and 2007. But I'm going to go into much more detail on what we found in 2010 because this is our recently released data. We ask an open-ended question to state health agencies about what are their top priorities for the coming year. And what we found when we did a qualitative analysis on these was that infrastructure, capacity building, information technology, and workforce, the kind of real the things that make the state health agencies go, these were really a top priority for 17% of state health agencies. Now, 17% is not a huge number, but as far as putting these different priorities into categories, that was really the most popular category, the most widespread. We found that quality improvement was named as a top priority for 9% of state health agencies. Health promotion and prevention generally was mentioned for 8%. I don't need to go down and read all of these on the slide. A lot of them are things that you would expect to see. We also see 4% had to say that a top priority for them was dealing with funding and mitigating budget cuts. So that's what they said their priorities were in 2010. We also ask about federal initiatives that the state public health agencies have responsibility for. And as you can see, there are a number of federal initiatives on here that are really very close to universal among state health agencies. That includes the Maternal and Infant Health Services, prenatal care, the Title V funding, also the Preventive Health and Health Services Block Grant from CDC, CDC Preparedness Grants, the National Cancer Prevention and Control Program Grant. All of those are 94%, 96%. WIC, also very commonly run by the state health agencies at 94%. And then you can see HIV pharmacies, the HRSA preparedness grants, injury prevention grants, vital statistics, and health professional shortage area designations. These are all things that are very commonly done by the state health agencies. The next thing I want to look at is some of the population-based primary prevention services. Of course, this is what I think of when I think of what public health does. But when you look at governmental public health at the state level, you see that these population-based primary prevention services are really very commonly the responsibility of the state health agency. So that includes tobacco use prevention and control, HIV, nutrition, injury, physical activity, STD counseling, diabetes, hypertension, violence, and unintended pregnancy. These are all in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Hypertension, violence, and unintended pregnancy are a little less common than the others. Immunization services breaks out in kind of an interesting way. So what we find when we ask about this, we ask two different questions about immunization. We ask who in the state handles vaccine order management and inventory distribution, and then we also ask about the actual administration of the vaccine to the population. So when you look at the order management and inventory distribution, 92% of health agencies are responsible for that when it comes to childhood immunizations, and 98% are responsible when it comes to adult immunizations. When you look at administration of the vaccine to the population, you see it's about half that. And I think that's because in a lot of states, that's really the realm of the local health departments and or private providers. Then when you look at the international travel immunizations, that's a lot less likely to be the purview of the state health agency. When we take a look at maternal and child health services, we see some of these are also very common, particularly children with special health care needs is an important service provided by state health agencies. But then about half of the state health agencies are also directly doing WIC. This is different from whether or not they have responsibility for that federal initiative. They may be contracting it out. So 57% answered that they are actively involved in this. And then also early intervention services for children, MCH home visits, that's at 50%. I'm thinking with the Affordable Care Act, that may go up over the next few years. So we'll keep looking at that. And then family planning at 47%. We also drilled down into environmental health services. Again, some of these are done by virtually all state health agencies, including environmental epidemiology and food safety education. It's a little less common for the state health agency to have responsibility for toxicology, radiation control, and indoor air quality. And then going down to the 50 and 60% range, we have vector control, radon control, private water supply safety, public water supply safety, and groundwater protection. So this one is a little bit different. This has to do with the worksite wellness program actually at the state health agency. So this, I kind of think of this as the walking the walk slide. In addition to talking the talk in terms of health education, what we did here was we asked about a lot of different components that might be in a worksite wellness program, and we asked what the state health agencies were doing. So they could mark off a number of these. You know, it's virtually universal that state health agencies are in smoke-free buildings. 88% of them have some kind of footage requirement as far as where you can smoke outside of the building. 84% of them answered that they had some kind of healthy maternity policies, and 73% of them responded that they offer weight loss or physical activity programs. When you get down to what kind of venues they use for meetings or conferences, you see that 63% have a requirement that it be a smoke-free venue. So that's quite a bit lower. Insurance coverage for tobacco cessation comes in at about 61%. And then when we look at healthy eating policies for catered events, we see 41%. This one I found to be pretty interesting because something like insurance coverage for tobacco cessation, that costs a lot of money. State health agencies don't have a lot of money. You can understand what the barriers to that might be. But a healthy eating policy for catered events is a different story. And so it was interesting to me that only 41% of state health agencies had that. So something that ASTO does, trying to kind of walk the walk for its members, is we have our own healthy eating policy for catered events, and when we hold our annual meeting or when we hold other meetings, which we do throughout the year, we sometimes get complaints about the tofu or about the small portions or the lack of dessert, but it's something we've been doing for a while, and I think it sends a very strong message. I mean, given the amount of conversation that takes place around it, and I think that just in my own anecdotal experience, I've been there for 3 years now, and I have seen it progress from lots of complaints about the cold tofu to people actually thanking me, saying, you know, I went to a public health meeting the other day and they were serving donuts for breakfast and I'm a diabetic and that doesn't work for me. So I think there's a lot more positive feeling about it. And actually, you know, ASTA's really promoting this across its partners, including its corporate partners. And apparently Target has made a decision that they are going to be looking at a healthy food policy for their employees, and they're using ASTA's as a model for that. So this is something we're very interested in. 35% of state health agencies have farmers markets for staff. That seems a lot harder to accomplish, but a really great thing that they're doing. 31% have a healthy vending policy. And then 8% have a menu labeling policy, which may be reflective of not necessarily having menus to label. So now I'm going to look at some of the other public health agent activities, and I'm hoping that what you're seeing at this point in the presentation is that the scope of work for state public health agencies is incredibly broad. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. I'm not presenting, you know, half of the activities to you. But the things that we collect data on that fall into the other public health activities category include trauma system coordination, which, as you can imagine, is a really important service to be provided, and that's done by 78% of the state health agencies. Also, state health planning and development, veterinarian public health activities, something you may not be thinking of, that's 71% of the state health agencies that do that. 67% of the state health agencies run an IRB, an institutional review board for research. 61% provide some kind of non-clinical services in corrections facilities. So there's actually a fairly large presence in the correctional facilities by the state health agencies. Some of the less common things have to do with occupational safety and health services. We see that at 39% of state health agencies. Also forensics laboratory, 31%. Needle exchange, somewhat controversial program at 27%. Running the state mental institutions and hospitals, that's 24% of state health agencies that do that. That's a clinical service that you may not necessarily think of state health agencies doing. And then 22% house the medical examiner's office. When we look at access to healthcare services, we see 84% of states have health disparities or minority health initiatives. 75% provide financial support to primary care providers. We see 73%, which is 37 state health agencies, doing rural health. And I don't know if you remember the slide that I showed much earlier, but it showed that in 2001, there were 37 state health agencies doing rural health, and that dipped down a bit in 2007. Now in 2010, we see that that's back up to 37. So I'm getting a time warning, so I'm going to move a little faster through the rest of these because I do want to get to the budget cuts material. This just shows you all of the different screenings that they may do and how common they are. And again, if you would like to look at this for longer than the 20 seconds, I'm going to leave it up here. Come to the ASTO booth and you can get the report on this. Same with the treatment of diseases. I'm going to give you 5 seconds for that one. And other individual clinical services. Here's a very long list that if you come get our report, you will be able to look at for a longer period of time. State health agencies also run the state laboratories, and they provide a lot of very important services. Here are some of those state laboratory services. Also epidemiology and surveillance, something you probably knew that state health agencies do. Professional licensure, between 20 and 25% of state health agencies are responsible for the professional licensure of these key healthcare provider positions. And they also provide a whole lot of technical assistance and training to emergency responders, hospitals, laboratories, community-based organizations, and local public health agencies. This is a very important function for the state health agencies. And these are some of the topics they provide training on. And they also run sponsored loan repayment programs. So whether or not the state health agency is actively engaged in providing actual clinical care, what they are doing is running these sponsored loan repayment programs that draw more providers to the areas that have been designated as health professional shortage areas. They're also engaged in research to a fairly large degree. Okay, so just at the end here, I want to talk very briefly about program cuts. The vast majority of state health agencies have been subjected to budget cuts over the last few years. They are cutting a lot of programs, and if you look at the slide, you see how we categorized some of them and the number of states that have had these specific cuts. It does not narrow the scope of responsibilities of the state health agencies that they have been cutting these programs. They still have all of the responsibilities they have before. And what we're finding is that while they do potentially eliminate small programs, what they're much more likely to do is reduce services, lay off staff, ask people to wear three hats instead of one, that type of thing. So it's, I think what we're seeing, if we continue to see these budget cuts and we don't see more funding from the federal government, we're going to see a continued sort of watering down of services, which I don't think is a good thing for the health of the population. And that is the end of my presentation. So do we have 1 minute for questions or nothing left? No time left. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Please, let's see, I have my email address here. Please feel free to email me with comments and questions. I will be glad to get back to you. Thank you. Thank you.